Begonnen hat die moderne Zirkadianrhythmik mit der Forschung der Zirbeldrüse. Und zwar um 1898. Hofstetter hat 1907 promoviert, ist dann im Ersten Weltkrieg gewesen, war ein Gynäkologe und hat mit wässrigen Extrakten der Zirbeldrüse versucht, wo wirkt es bei Patienten. Und aufgrund der Hypothese von Marburg war natürlich als erstes anzunehmen, dass es die Sexualaktivität hemmen würde. Ich selber bin im Jahr 81 nach Boston gegangen. Die zweite Wirkung, die wir untersucht haben, ist die Wirkung, hat Melatonin eine schlafmachende Wirkung. Das wurde also von dem Entdecker, vom Lerner, damals schon in einem Selbstversuch beschrieben. Er hat gesagt, der hat Melatonin extirpiert, hat es synthetisiert, charakterisiert und hat es sich selber gespritzt. Und was er gefunden hat, ist, dass er eingeschlafen ist.
You can see on this map from far away how lit up the world is now at night, as opposed to before the invention of the incandescent light bulb. This also leads to a phenomenon that we refer to as light pollution. On the very right side, you see how maybe I have seen the sky when I was a child, or some of you may have seen it. You were able to see the stars and the Milky Ways. But this is almost impossible these days. In an urban environment, you have what you see to the left, a very light-polluted sky that doesn't allow you to see the stars. Besides the flora and fauna, the circadian system has an important impact on us humans as well. The mechanism, how this works, is on the left. You see the light exposure as it falls onto our eyes, on the retina. In 2003, two independent labs discovered that there's a third receptor in the retina that we had not known up until then. We refer to it as a melanopsin receptor. It's functioning even if your visual system, if the rods and cones are not working. It is not surprising that many studies more recently have been focusing on exactly that. How does a disruption of the circadian system impact our system? And that has been more driven after the invention of the light bulb, because before that we could not turn on the light at night, so it would have been naturally dark, as our body would expect. But now we can change this. And what happens is that this nightly peak production of melatonin that you see on the left, which shows you that this also becomes less and less of a peak as we get older, but this peak can be suppressed by light exposure.
What is night work exactly? Originally, night was used to describe the period between dusk and dawn where it was dark, but this would make all of us night workers in December, so they restricted the definition of night work to scheduled work between midnight and 6 a.m. From an occupational health perspective, individual resilience and coping strategies are very important to keep night work as healthy as possible. And we know that job demands and the kind of work and the workload experience during nighttime work can indeed give you better or worse health outcomes in these workers. We do know that with several night shifts in succession, you have elevated fatigue, elevated emotional exhaustion, and you are more prone to experiencing job stress negatively. Also, the immune system is disrupted. This is the reason why an expert review of working time literature proposed to do a maximum of 3 night shifts in a row in succession, and they also put together other recommendations for the scheduling and the design of night work. So the problem with jet lag is similar to the problem with night shift work, but due to its not so chronic component, we have more of a disruptance of mental health, especially in vulnerable individuals, so people who are affected for psychotic disorders. There is pharmacological adaptation support. For example, you can recommend melatonin to your patients, but be careful in people with epilepsy or in oral anticoagulation.
We saw that there was a 50% increase in breast cancer risk in women who had a high probability of being exposed to light at night. So how do we find out if shift work causes cancer? For that purpose, the International Agency for Research on Cancer under the World Health Organization has established a procedure in order to find out of that. It consists of two steps. First, all the evidence from the scientific literature is evaluated, both related to cancer in humans, cancer in experimental animals, and mechanisms that could be of relevance. And all this evidence is brought together and an overall evaluation is made, where an exposure can be either carcinogenic to humans, probably carcinogenic to humans, or possibly carcinogenic to humans. And all taken together, the overall evaluation was the shift work that involves circadian disruption is probably carcinogenic to humans. We had a smaller study in Denmark where we tried to replicate this, and that was actually possible. We found that if you had only 1 to 2 shifts per week, independent on how many years you have had it, you have the same risk if you have never had night shift work. But if you had 3 shifts for more than 6 years, you had a double risk. The sum of the studies is that breast cancer risk is associated with night shift work in premenopausal women only. And we see a higher risk with higher intensity. Higher intensity is more shift per week, for instance, long duration, long night shift, and a decrease when the night shift work has been quitted. Future directions in my country, we have a new cohort, a prospective cohort, where we have had a baseline questionnaire for 42,000 men and women. And this has included detailed questions on working time, sleep, diurnal preference, and all other potential confounders.
Now, one of these insults that can occur during pregnancy is prenatal hypoxia. This is a quite common pregnancy complication. It is estimated that about 0.5 to more than 2% of the fetus suffers from fetal hypoxia. To study the reason and the molecular mechanisms that cause this hypertension, researchers mainly use animal models, and among the most important animal models are mice, rats, and guinea pigs. The way hypoxia can be induced in these animals can be quite different, so we can use environmental oxygen tensions, reduction of the oxygen tension. Now, in recent years, there is more and more evidence that these two very important transcription factors can interact and influence each other. So, for instance, the subunits of these heterodimers, they can interact with each other. So CLOCK can interact with part of the HIF transcription factors. There is obviously an interaction with the CLOCK genes and with the transcription factors necessary here, so they can mutually impact each other. And it can be assumed that prenatal hypoxia acting during different times of the day may affect the regulatory mechanisms of the cardiovascular system to different aspects.
What we used in terms of data, and that has also come up already, we had available data from the Nurses Health Study too. Just a quick idea, it's more than 100,000 nurses. The organizers have managed to actually recruit the offspring or children of the nurses in the so-called growing up to day studies. We are left with about 4,800 children that are born to 4,000 mothers. You see in the columns, the duration of night shift work the mothers have experienced before conception, mothers who have a longer history of night shift work have a tendency to be older. They also are more likely to be past or current smokers, and they actually have a slightly higher or obviously higher risk of having depressed themselves before. And you see that there is actually no obvious trend that, for example, longer duration of night shift work of the mother before conception would increase the offspring's risk of depression. Stratified by chronotype, we actually saw an increased risk for depression in the offspring whose mothers worked night shifts and were definite morning types.
Compared to the conventional therapy, which is in the morning, as shown here in the blue, chronotherapy, which is bedtime administration of glucocorticoids, was more advantageous because it reduced the morning symptoms, the stiffness and the pain in the morning, probably through suppressing the cytokines. So this was the mediating pathway. And in addition, it seemed to also improve the sleep. So these were really a few studies, small, rather small studies, showing that morning vaccination was superior to afternoon or evening vaccination. Always two groups were compared, so there was no like continuous data. So as you can see, we had a very nice distribution of vaccination times that were ranging from 9 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. So here we explored the shape and we found a reverse J-shape association or U-shape association where the highest antibody levels were achieved after morning vaccination. So in line with previous literature, the lowest antibody levels were achieved after early afternoon, so around noon, and then intermediate antibody levels after the late afternoon vaccination. What the age group analysis showed was essentially that age does seem to have an effect, so it influences the shape of the association. So whereas in the young people we observe this U shape or reverse J shape, in the older people it becomes more of a linear association.
Everyone who is interested in circadian rhythm research in a sort of biological rhythm and well-being lab summary, which we, by the way, dedicate to the memory of Erhard Haus. Those of us who work in this field know him very well. We look forward to reinvigorating the tremendous amount of work that has been happened over time, including Professor Waldhauser, who started off today. And so I just want to say that we want to establish this more firmly, want to have a bigger group working with us and do more research in this field. And with the people we have here, we are confident that it will give a real impetus to this research in Vienna.